And host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, this is Democracy Now!, War, Peace, and the Presidency, breaking with convention.
Let me know in my heart when my days are through. America, America, I gave my best to you.
President Biden on the opening night of the Democratic National Convention. Out on the streets of Chicago, thousands marched against U.S. backing of Israel's war on Gaza.
We are here to make it clear that the people of the United States are not represented in that DNC. That DNC convention is a coronation of war criminals. And we are here to say that it is not with our consent that they are continuing to fund and provide weapons to the war criminals of the state, colonial state of Israel.
Meanwhile, inside the convention, the DNC holds the first ever panel on Palestinian human rights.
If we remain silent and we become complicit, but if we stand up and demand action, an arms embargo, a ceasefire, an end to war, we may have an opportunity to restore the soul of the Democratic Party.
And we look at the life and legacy of pioneering TV host Bill Donahue. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. We're breaking with convention. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden took to the stage on the first night of the Democratic National Convention Monday, where he passed the torch to Vice President Kamala Harris.
Selecting Kamala was the very first decision I made when I became our nominee. And it was the best decision I made my whole career.
A few minutes into Biden's remarks, protesters dropped a sign that read, "Stop arming Israel." The sign was quickly wrestled away from protesters. We'll speak to three delegates involved in last night's actions in hour two of our live DNC broadcast. The DNC on Monday evening voted to adopt the party's official platform, which does not call for an arms embargo on Israel and reasserts unwavering U.S. support for Israel. Also on the first night of the DNC, three speakers, Amanda Zarofsky, Caitlin Joshua, and Hadley Duvall, shared their experiences from the podium with abortion, a central issue in November's election. Zarofsky was one of a group of women who sued Texas last year after they were denied abortions, even as their pregnancies posed serious risks to their health and were non-viable. Caitlin Joshua described her experience living through Louisiana's abortion ban.
2 years ago, my husband and I were expecting our second child. Our daughter, Lauren, couldn't wait to be a big sister. I was getting ready for her fourth birthday party when something didn't feel right. Two emergency rooms sent me away. Because of Louisiana's abortion ban, no one would confirm that I was miscarrying. I was in pain, bleeding so much my husband feared for my life. No woman should experience what I endured, but too many have. They write to me saying, "What happened to you happened to me." Sometimes they're miscarrying, scared to tell anyone, even their doctors. Our daughters deserve better. America deserves better.
We'll have more on the first day of the Democratic National Convention, inside and out, after headlines. Thousands of protesters took to the streets Monday as part of the march on the DNC. Nick Tilson's an Oglala Lakota leader and president of the NDN Collective.
I'm here to remind America that this election is happening on the stolen lands of indigenous people, and the Land Back movement stands in solidarity with a free Palestine and to end all military aid to the state of Israel and to stop the genocide.
Amidst heavy police presence, a group of protesters broke off from the main march and headed to the United Center, where they breached a security fence as they chanted, "Whose streets are streets?" before police began making arrests outside the DNC. We'll hear a number of those voices after headlines. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accepted a U.S. proposal that would bridge remaining differences in achieving a Gaza ceasefire and urged Hamas to do the same. Hamas called out the hypocrisy of Blinken's announcement and repeated its demand that any deal must result in a permanent end to Israel's war on Gaza, and accusing the U.S. of, quote, merely buying time for Israel to continue its genocide, unquote, by watering down a previous agreement. Despite the news from Blinken, who's now in Egypt to garner support for the deal, Israel's carnage in Gaza continues unabated. The UN warned Monday Israel is now relentlessly striking the besieged territory, with almost all Gazans displaced and some resorting to living among the rubble amidst Israel's barrage of evacuation orders. In Khan Yunis, distraught family members gathered at the Nasser Hospital morgue after Israeli strikes earlier today killed at least 11 people, including children. This is researcher and professor Iyad Abu Mustafa speaking outside the hospital.
دولة الاحتلال لا زالت تقوم بعمليات وحشية مستمرة يوما بعد يوم.
The occupying state continues to carry out brutal operations day after day. Yesterday, 18 martyrs were killed, and this morning, more than 10 martyrs. The number of martyrs has reached more than 44,000 martyrs. This escalation indicates a crime of genocide, a well-organized crime. Every bloodbath is a crime in itself. There is no country in the world that is able to stop these serious violations against the Palestinian people. The United States is still taking the neutral stance and is blindly biased towards the occupying Israeli state.
Meanwhile, Israel says it's retrieved the bodies of six Israeli hostages from Khan Yunis overnight. The families of hostages have been calling on Netanyahu to work towards a ceasefire in Gaza for months. Back in the United States, in Wisconsin, a Kenosha County court has sentenced Crystal Kaiser to 11 years in prison after she pleaded guilty to charges related to the killing and self-defense of the man who sex trafficked and assaulted her in 2018. She was 17 years old at the time. He'd abused her since she was 16. Court records show Kenosha police knew the man, Randall Volar, who was white, had a history of sexually abusing black girls, and was under investigation for sex trafficking, but he remained free for months. Kaiser says she shot and killed Volar in self-defense after he drugged her and tried to rape her. In Georgia, the Republican-controlled election board approved a new rule Monday, giving county election board officials more power to examine votes after Election Day, a move which could delay the certification of results and allow officials who are unhappy with the results to sow chaos and doubt over the election. ProPublica reports the new rule was pushed by the far-right group Election Integrity Network, which is run by Cleta Mitchell, an election denier who tried to help Trump overturn his loss in Georgia in 2020. In New York, former Republican Congressmember George Santos pleaded guilty to federal wire fraud and identity theft charges. Among other things, Santos admitted to defrauding his donors by using their money for personal use and charging their cards without authorization, as well as lying about his finances on House disclosure forms. The former Congressman Santos's guilty plea comes just weeks before he was scheduled to stand trial. Last year, he was expelled from the House in a rare move, putting an end to his brief congressional career. Santos will be sentenced in February. He faces at least 2 years in prison. This is Nassau District Attorney Ann Donnelly.
George Santos is many things. He's a liar, he's a master manipulator, and a con man. But one thing he's not above the law.
The advocacy group Tax Justice Network said even a modest wealth tax on the world's richest could easily raise $2 trillion each year, more than enough to help poorer nations become climate resilient and transition to clean energy. The group cited Spain's solidarity surcharge, implemented less than 2 years ago, which raised hundreds of millions of euros last year simply by imposing a small progressive tax on the net worth of the 0.5% richest households. The Tax Justice Network released its proposal for a global tax on the ultra-rich ahead of November's UN Climate Change Conference in Baku, Azerbaijan. Democracy Now! Will be there. In related news, the Southern African Development Community warns some 68 million people, nearly one-fifth of the population of Southern Africa, are suffering from the effects of a severe climate change-fueled drought. Meanwhile, Azerbaijan is sounding the alarm over the catastrophic shrinking of the Caspian Sea due to changes in the climate. Azerbaijan's President Ilham Aliyev said he discussed the situation with Russian President Vladimir Putin on Monday.
From the window of the room where we held talks, I showed Vladimir Putin the rocks that were underwater 2 years ago, and today they have already emerged a meter above the surface. And we are seeing this along the entire coast of the Absheron Peninsula, and not only there, along the entire coast of Azerbaijan.
The Caspian Sea is the world's largest inland body of water and is bordered by Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Russia, Iran, and Turkmenistan. Baku, the capital of Azerbaijan, will host November's upcoming UN climate talks. And in some more hopeful climate news, environmental groups in the U.S. hailed a major milestone as new federal data revealed wind and solar overtook energy production from coal in the first half of this year, and the trend is likely to continue for the rest of the year. Ben Jealous, head of the Sierra Club, said the news represents a, quote, significant win for clean energy advocates, for ratepayers, and for people in communities across the country that simply want to breathe clean air, drink safe water, and worry less about climate disasters like floods and wildfires, Ben Jealous said. Those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We're broadcasting from the studios of CAN TV here in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. The Democratic Convention, National Convention, opened on Monday with speeches by top officials of the Democratic Party, including an unscheduled appearance on stage by Vice President Kamala Harris and President Joe Biden, wrapping up the night with a 50-minute address. Earlier in the day, thousands of protesters took to the streets to voice their opposition to Israel's war on Gaza and to call on Biden, Harris, and the Democratic Party to end U.S. support for the war. Demonstrators gathered in Union Park for a rally before setting off on a march through the streets amidst a heavy police presence. A few dozen protesters broke away from the larger group and marched toward the United Center, the site of the DNC, and tore down parts of the security fence. Several protesters who managed to get through the fence were detained and handcuffed by police. Protesters are scheduled in Chicago every day this week for the DNC.
Democracy Now! Was on the streets yesterday covering the march on the DNC. These are some of the voices of those protesters.
We all come together to say one thing. We want humanity to take priority over profit. We want people to come together. Our front is united. It's stronger than it's ever been. I don't think I've ever seen as diverse a protest in my life. And I've been going since I was little, and seeing all these different flags, all these different faces, all these different flyers holding up signs for queer liberation, for black liberation, for workers' rights, for disabled people rights. It's extremely empowering, and I think that frightens the white supremacy cushion that our elected officials have been sitting on. They're losing their power, and they realize that with our tie to solidarity and our united front continuing to build and become more unwavering, it's only a matter of time until their time is up and we begin to speak. As Kamala Harris said, she's speaking. Well, we're speaking now, and we're making sure you hear us, that you're not going to get away with the killing of hundreds of thousands of people, not just in Palestine, but just wreaking havoc all over the global south and on all minority communities.
My name is Nick Tilson. I'm of La Lakota. I'm the president and CEO of NDN Collective. We're an international indigenous rights organization dedicated to building indigenous power. And I'm from Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. And I'm here to remind America that this election is happening on the stolen lands of indigenous people. And the Land Back movement stands in solidarity with a free Palestine and to end all military aid to the state of Israel and to stop the genocide.
We're here today. We, as SDS, have been launching a long campaign for divestment on our campus, so demanding that our administration divests from countries complicit in war crimes, and that includes Israel and weapons manufacturing companies. But we're also here as Minnesota residents saying that we want to hold our Democratic politicians accountable, and that now includes Tim Walz. And we've actually been protesting Walz for years and years. He's the chair of the State Board of Investments in Minnesota, so he's responsible for investing Minnesota tax dollars, and him personally, with the SBI, invests currently $3.2 billion into Israeli companies that are complicit in genocide. And I was actually arrested on Walz's front lawn for protesting this exact thing before he was even announced that he was the VP nominee.
My name's Jasper Nordine. I'm a UPS Teamster, Local 638, Minneapolis. I'm also with Minnesota Workers United. I get really annoyed when Republicans are like, Tim Walz is this super far-left radical. Like, I assure you he's not. He sent out the National Guard to beat up protesters after the George Floyd riots in 2020. He's continually ignored people calling for Minnesota to divest its investments in Israel and its genocide.
With MIRAC, the Minnesota Immigrant Rights Action Committee. The same company, Elbit Systems, that created the wall in Gaza, created and has funded and designed the wall at our southern border in Mexico that uses both wall and then and what they're calling smart wall technology, surveillance towers, drone systems. And so there is a pretty direct link between Palestine and Gaza, because the same business of oppression is being used in both places.
And what is your response? It seems like Kamala Harris is trying to prove that she's tougher on border security than Trump in order to garner more support. What are your thoughts on that strategy?
Border security is a lost cause. Border security is an illusion. There is no such thing as a safe border. This wall is impossible. We are spending millions and millions of dollars at something that will never be completed and will never make us safe. Most drugs coming through the border come through legal ports of entry, and they are aided by Custom and Border Patrol agents. So her position is just to continue the same, which is pushing our money, our tax dollars, into a system that will never work for any of us.
We are here to make it clear that the people of the United States are not represented in that DNC. That DNC convention is a coronation of war criminals. And we are here to say that it is not with our consent that they are continuing to fund and provide weapons to the war criminals of the state, colonial state of Israel. We're here to say that they have enough business in the United States to take care of, that does not require for them to go across the globe waging war. We are here to We need a price freeze on essential goods. We are here to say that the urgency our communities need to be covered with housing, with health care, but instead they're spending trillions of dollars on bombing babies, and it is not with our consent. And we demand not only to be heard, but to have political and economic decision-making power in this so-called democracy.
Palestine will live forever!
Palestine will live forever!
Palestine will live forever!
Some of the voices from the thousands in the streets of Chicago at the march on the DNC protests. Special thanks to Messiah Rhodes, Maria Taracena, Sam Alkoff, and Henna Elias. When we come back, we go inside the convention for the first ever panel on Palestinian human rights at the DNC. Stay with us.
I can see the lines from a town. They are floating on the sky. I'm making my
A Place to Stay by Sam Burton. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, Peace, and the Presidency, Breaking with Convention. I'm Amy Goodman here in Chicago with Juan Gonzalez.
Well, the opening day of the Democratic Convention on Monday featured the first ever panel on Palestinian human rights at the DNC. The panel was announced just a day earlier and came after persistent grassroots organizing against U.S. support for Israel's assault on Gaza.
The panel was moderated by Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison and featured former Michigan Congressmember Andy Levin, Hala Hijazi, a Democratic organizer and fundraiser who's had over 100 family members killed in Gaza, Dr. Tanya Hashhassan, a pediatric intensive care surgeon who served in Gaza many times, Leila Elabed, the co-chair of the Uncommitted Movement, and James Zogby, a former longtime executive member of the Democratic National Committee and the founder of the Arab American Institute. Zogby began by speaking about the significance of the first ever panel on Palestinian rights being held at the DNC.
I have been doing this for most of my life, like 50 years. And I remember when we couldn't get the issue of Palestine discussed at the Coalition for a New Foreign and Military Policy. That was all the left groups, because they said if you let the Arabs in, we'll lose our credibility. And when the anniversary of Dr. King's march happened, again, we were invited to be on the steering committee, and they said, if you let the Arabs in, it'll hurt our credibility. And so we were asked to leave. Jesse Jackson made all the difference in the world because he elevated the issue, and he elevated those of us who raised the issue. And the last two times, the only two times that the word Palestine was mentioned at a Democratic convention was 1984, 1988 with Jesse Jackson, when he spoke in his speech about it, and he invited me first to give him a nominating speech where I talked about justice for Palestinians. And then in 88, we had a platform fight, an actual platform debate from the podium of the convention on justice for Palestinians. So we've come a long way. People say to me, well, you're just being optimistic. You're just saying, you know, cup is half full. I say, no, I remember when we didn't have a cup. And we are now with a cup and filling it up. So when I look at this panel today, it is not the prize. The prize is a change in policy. That's the prize. But what's historic here is that we are having an officially sanctioned panel to talk about it. Like I said, it's not the main prize. It's not the big prize. But it is something I do not want to dismiss for a minute as to how significant this is, about what message the Harris campaign is sending by saying, we want to talk about this and hear you talk about it. And so I've heard some grumbling, you know. I quote Willie Barrow, a friend of mine from the Jackson campaign in the 80s, who said, we ain't never been here before. She'd say, we ain't never been here before. We've never had this forum before. And it is not, like I said, the end. It's the beginning of a process. And the difference is, and I told this to Layla and Abbas last night, that when we raised it in 84 and 88, we did so because Jesse Jackson enabled us. It was a top-down. There were people in our Jackson coalition who were, Reverend, you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to talk about this? He said, damn it, I'm doing it. I've been doing it from the beginning. We're not backing away. This is different. No candidate elevated this movement. This was a bottom up. This was Abbas. This was Layla. This was Waleed. This was activists across the country who said, we're not taking it. And part of recognition of that is that we're having a forum. A recognized one. I've been to a lot of the forums since this day has begun. You know, I've been to a number of these sessions. This is the largest audience I've seen for any one of them.
That was James Zogby, the former longtime executive member of the Democratic National Committee and the founder of the Arab American Institute. One of the most emotional parts of the panel came during comments by Dr. Tanya Haj Hassan, a pediatric intensive care surgeon who has been to Gaza several times over the past 10 months with the Aid Group Doctors Without Borders and other groups. She spoke about some of what she witnessed in Gaza.
For the past 10 months, we have witnessed civilian massacre after civilian massacre, school massacres where internally displaced people were sheltering, the flower massacre, massacres of people trying to collect water, massacres of people collecting aid at aid sites, massacre after civilian massacre, entire families exterminated in one single bomb, humanitarians, healthcare workers killed, and journalists killed in record numbers. Pediatric amputations in children that are breaking records. Over 17,000 children who have lost one or both parents since October in Gaza. We have treated so many children who have lost their entire family that it has, a term has been coined to describe these children. You've probably heard it, wounded child, no surviving family, WCNSF. This is a term that has been coined since October to describe this very frequent phenomenon that I personally witnessed more times than I can count while I was there. For children, I have held the hand of children who are taking their last gasps because their entire family was killed in the same attack and couldn't be there holding their hand and comforting them and could not bury them thereafter. For the children who I treated who were discharged, they were and survived, they face a Russian roulette of 100 ways that they will likely and potentially die when they leave the hospital due to the circumstances incompatible with life that have been architectured by this military assault. Direct bombing, starvation, dehydration, disease. Alarming reports of the first cases of polio in Gaza right now. Polio is a potentially deadly disease that causes paralysis, including paralysis of the muscles needed to breathe. That has been eradicated for decades in that region. There has been a polio vaccination campaign that essentially has eradicated the disease from the majority of the world, and now we're seeing cases emerging in an area of the world that has a healthcare system that has been completely and entirely annihilated. I mentioned these wounded children with no surviving family. I'm going to give you two quick stories just so that you can humanize what I mean when I say this, because I know it's really hard to hear these numbers and think about individuals and what this means to them. I received a young boy into the emergency department during one of the mass casualties who had half of his face and neck blown off. Luckily, the organs that are vital for breathing and blood supply to the brain were preserved. They were visible, but preserved. And he was talking to us. He couldn't see himself, so he didn't know what he looked like at that point in time, and he kept asking for his sister. His sister was in the bed next to him. The majority of her body was burned beyond recognition.